Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 4th of January, Anno Domini 2014. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Time to start these hoop-de-doos.
Hoop-de-doo.
Hoop-de-doo. Let's go with the NSA.
Maybe not.
The U.S. National Security Agency can reportedly sniff out every last bit of data from your iPhone, according to leaked NSA documents published by German magazine Der Spiegel, known as Dropout Jeep. The spyware is said to be one of the tools employed by NSA's ANT, Advanced or Access Network Technology Division, to gain backdoor access to various electronic devices. On Sunday, leaked documents obtained by Der Spiegel shows how these tools have reportedly been used to infiltrate computers, hard drives, routers, and other devices from tech companies such as Cisco, Dell, Western Digital, Seagate, Maxtor, and Samsung. Those same documents reveal how Dropout Jeep can infiltrate virtually all areas of the iPhone, including voicemail, contacts, lists, instant messages, cell tower locations, etc. The tool's abilities are revealed in the following description from one of the apparently leaked NSA documents published by Der Spiegel. Dropout Jeep is a software implant for the Apple iPhone that utilizes modular mission applications to provide specific SIGINT functions, signal intelligence functions. This functionality includes the ability to remotely push-pull files from the device, SMS retrieval, contact list retrieval, voicemail, geolocation, hot microphone, camera capture, cell tower location, etc. Command, control, and data exfiltration can occur over SMS messages or a GPRS data connection. All communications with the implant will be covert and encrypted. The document ends by saying that Dropout Jeep will initially be installed through closed access methods, that a future version would focus on remote installation. The spyware tool was reportedly developed in 2008. To target the very first iPhones. Computer security researcher and independent journalist Jacob Applebaum also described Dropout Jeep in a presentation at the 30C3 conference on Monday. Applebaum even speculated over whether Apple played any role in helping or allowed the NSA to obtain backdoor access to the iPhone. That's an interesting theory. Tech companies have been forced to cooperate with the NSA in turning over certain customer data. A new report claims that the NSA paid security firm RSA $10 million to create backdoors in its encryption tokens. Apple denied any involvement in assisting the NSA to create a backdoor for the iPhone. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the NSA can snoop everything in your iPhone. The choices are, that's horrible, well, that's a problem, I'm unhappy but unfazed, and I don't care. Currently, exactly. Currently, we have 28 votes. I don't care is pretty much neck and neck with that's horrible. And I know you'll have more to say because, you're who you are. And so if you go to the forum, you'll find a link in our forums. You'll find on the right-hand side. And once you get in the forums, you'll see the second forum down. On the list is the poll discussion. If you go into there, you will see that the number one choice there is the 4Jan14. The NSA can snoop everything in your phone. So far, we've got four people who've posted. And we're looking forward to hearing from you. And, of course, are you still feeling great about your iPhone? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966 5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
So you gentlemen both had a good holiday?
We had a great holiday, but let's talk about that after we talk about this, since it's fresher in our minds.
Okay.
Yeah, what part of me is thinking is there is the media is unfairly attacking Apple again, because it's probably every cell phone company, not just Apple,
This is the one they've actually found. I mean, this is the one that came out in the Snowden
documents. Yeah, there's a piece of hardware that's been available to law enforcement for years. I think we talked about it 3 or 4 years ago when it came out. And this company claims that they can copy all data from any phone, and they sell it to police agencies who give it to their patrol officers. So when a cop stops you on patrol and demands your phone, and most people turn it over, what's wrong with my phone?
Right.
The cop plugs it into this thing, USB port, docking cable, whatever phone it is, it copies all the data over. What we've been seeing with the Snowden documents is that companies that claim to be not helping the NSA are probably telling the truth, because usually these national security letters require them to not say yes or no either way.
Right.
So the fact that they're saying no means that they don't know about it. And there was a really great episode of Security Now a couple of months ago. I'm going to post a link in a minute. The PRISM program that Snowden released documents for, Steve Gibson on Security Now was guessing how it would work, and later documents pretty much prove that's right. They don't have to put surveillance inside Apple. They go to Apple's ISP and Microsoft's ISP and Google's ISP. So every internet company buys their internet service from somebody upstream, and the term has become known as upstreaming. So they put a PRISM in the ISP to split the fiber cable, and now they capture all the data. Most of it is unencrypted, and the stuff that is encrypted, later Snowden documents have shown that most websites use 1024-bit encryption, which can be broken fairly easily. It takes $1 million machine a year to break 1024-bit public key encryption. And so we're assuming the NSA has a few thousand of those, so they can break it in a day or two.
Right.
And many websites have not gone up to 2048-bit encryption, and until they do, that will just be another scale effort for breaking the encryption. So the companies don't have to be involved and don't even have to know it's happening. They just go to the internet provider above them. And as the Security Now episode talked about a case in 2009, it was discovered that in 2006, the NSA in essence rented the office next to AT&T in San Francisco. 611 Folsom Street, I think it was. And they tapped all of AT&T's data. And anyone going through AT&T cellular or AT&T internet services, the NSA got a copy. And the documents that have leaked from Snowden show there was a green arrow over time showing that Apple's been added, Microsoft's been added, Yahoo's been added, Google's been added. Everyone has been upstreamed, so we can get all their data. And if it's encrypted, that's okay. We'll be able to decrypt it pretty quick.
Yeah, right. But the bottom line is, though, they've really got to have a want to get to your particular data. I mean, average person, probably not. They could care less that, you're writing Anchor Truth, this or that, or texting this person or that person. You've got to show up on their radar to have them.
And one of the points that they make that they bring up in the security podcast is that the federal laws are so vaguely written in many cases. That people break on average 3 federal laws a day. Without knowing.
Is that all?
Yeah, it's slackers.
Right. So they capture all the data there is because they can. And then if they decide they don't like you or want to find out more about you, they can go back through all this data and find all these other things you did and add all these charges. So that's why you see in the news about some of these cases where there's 115 counts against this guy. Well, yeah, 3 of them are speeding, 2 of them are jaywalking. It's okay, yeah, there's counts against this guy.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, I'm posting the link to Security Now episode 408 entitled The State of Surveillance, and it's basically Steve Gibson figuring out how PRISM works without seeing the documents yet. And documents that have since surfaced pretty much show that he was right all along.
Right.
Just by the name of it. It's not an acronym. It's literally a PRISM. You shine light into a PRISM from the fiber optic internet cable, and it splits the data. And so your data moves on to where it was supposed to go, and a copy gets split off into the NSA. And that goes along with their 5 zettabyte data store in Utah. So we had to look up prefixes. So we've got gigabytes. 1,000 gigabytes is a petabyte. 1,000 petabytes is a yottabyte. Is that next? 1,000 yottabytes is an exabyte, and 1,000 exabytes is a zettabyte.
Right.
So it's huge amounts of storage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huge. Yeah, and you're right. None of this says that Apple cooperated. None of this says that anybody cooperated.
No.
Or
that they even know. What it says is they've created a program that back in 2009 they were preparing to remote install on people's phones.
Right.
In order to be able to snoop at everything.
There's been worry for years that the Chinese companies that physically make our electronic devices have put backdoors in. They may have at the behest of the U.S. government.
Well, that's exactly right.
We don't have to worry about the Chinese government. It's our own government.
Yeah, really.
All right. To the phones. Our first caller, Bill from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's up?
Hi, guys. I know you had a thing on about routers the other day, and I sort of missed it. But I'm having trouble picking a router. Every time I look, like a 5-star router maybe has 1,000 counts, and then a 1-star router has 300. So that's almost like 30% bad marks against it. Do you have any you can pick to tell me that's a good name?
What brand are you been looking at?
All of them.
Yeah, Linksys is Cisco is probably the best brand name.
Because they bought up Linksys.
But then they sold it to Belkin, and we don't like Belkin very much. Yeah. The problem basically is that even with the best product, you're going to find some people that have problems with it.
Right.
But generally speaking, we have found the best success with the Linksys brand.
Linksys. Yeah, it's usually the easiest to set up, and a lot of folks have knowledge, and if you need help and support in setting one up.
Mm-hmm. The problem is, even within one brand, they will sell a dozen different models.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you sort of have to figure out how big your house is, which gives you the range that you have to. Mm-hmm. Or say your internet cable comes in at one end of the house, and you have to get to the other end of the house, so you may need an extended range router. It's really good if you can get your router right in the middle of the house, because it creates a sphere of radio for you.
I have one now. Matter of fact, Dave put it in, but it's a G. I need something faster. I need an N.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the new ones are N, the newest ones coming out are AC. That's the next Wi-Fi standard.
Is it smart to buy one that hasn't been out too long?
Well, it'll be ready for the next computer you buy, which will probably have AC in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And on the Apple side, I do have to say that the Apple routers are very, very simple to install, very easy to set up, especially for Mac users, because the installation software comes built into the Mac. Mm-hmm. But they work just fine with Windows users as well. And they have a couple of extra features that not all the Windows routers, the Windows typical routers have. Mm-hmm. Some of the routers will have a USB port on it where you can plug your printer into it. Mm-hmm. And then make your printer accessible to the network, so if you have a USB-only printer.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the routers also have a hard drive port on them, so you can have a network backup, so all your computers can be backed up on the network. Mm-hmm. And those are generally the higher-end routers, in the $100 or $200 range. You can get a basic router for $50, but you may end up replacing it every couple of years.
Bad buy, yes.
Yeah.
Can you recommend any models that you've used that, you have good luck with?
The Linksys N.
Well, they change every year. I've got an E3000 that I like at home, and they don't sell that anymore. It looks like they're in the 6000 series now. Because I've had mine a couple of years.
Yeah, same here. But like you say, it's a location, though, that helps make a big difference, too. Mine happens to be right in the center of the house, down in the basement. Mm-hmm. But I can, because it's an N router, Linksys, I can get all the way up to the second story in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And still get a good signal.
Yeah, N had a longer range than G, and an AC has an even longer range yet. There's a feature in AC called beaming, where instead of just a straight sphere of radio, like most radios are, it can beam a directional signal at the receiving computer so it can go faster for longer. That's one of the biggest advantages of AC.
I don't think I'll have any problem with range because, like I said, I got one now that works fine. I haven't, all my signals are excellent.
All right. Listen, we have to take a break.
Okay, well, thank you, guys.
Thank you. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Michael Oden is sitting in. I'm Nick Francesco. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Ray from Irondequoit, New York on the line. Hi, Ray. What's up?
We cut our cable back quite a bit, and we do a lot of streaming with Hulu and Netflix. And I don't seem to have a problem with Hulu, but Netflix, it seems, we can watch something, go to watch the next episode, and then it, like, get stuck and I have to shut it off and then resume. And I'm just wondering if there's any way I can speed up how we can, the Netflix, so we're not stopping and starting all the time.
Well, that, two things you can do. One is to set Netflix to a lower quality. It is likely that Hulu is set to a lower quality than Netflix, and therefore it's using less of your data stream and therefore having no trouble. But Netflix, using a higher quality, is using more of your data stream and having trouble.
How do you set that?
I can't tell you right off the top of my head, but somewhere in the settings. I'm sorry,
okay.
I don't have it in my head, but
you
it is
to go on the web and do it.
Indeed somewhere in the settings. Oh, you do it on the website?
Maybe in the web, not the app.
Yeah, check the website, and somewhere in there you can set how much of that, what kind of bandwidth you're using, what quality you want, standard, high quality, et cetera,
yeah, plus it determines what type of line he's got to begin with, just basically.
Well, and that's the second thing, which is getting a faster internet connection.
Yeah, I have the basic normal speed from Roadrunner, and the router and the machine are like side by side. So, I mean, I know I'm getting, a decent signal.
Yeah, but no, what we're saying, though, is, yes, you could be getting a decent signal, but it could also be attributed to the number of folks that are at the D-Slam. In other words, how many other folks are crowding in at your D-Slam, even though you're getting a good connection, which can slow you down.
Okay.
Because back in the day, I don't know if we've talked about it much anymore, but a lot of folks were complaining of horrible service, and there was just too many folks on their D-Slam. They had to be switched, and once they switched them and kind of got in to an uncrowded one, all of a sudden things started moving along a lot faster for them. So, again, there's a lot of variables, just like the old days, just other things that can contribute to what you're seeing and what's happening.
Okay. I'll give it a try on the website and see if there's a way I can change it.
Give it a shot. You got nothing to lose.
Okay, thank you very
much.
Have
a good one.
Thanks. Yes. Personally, I'm waiting for Greenlight to bring fiber to my house.
Yeah, and you're going to hold your breath for that one?
No, this year they say actually soon. Could be later this month.
And what's the charge on that going to be?
It's $50 a month for 100 megabit.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
So I'm.
They might put a crunch on, especially another company that's sitting there keeps saying that they're going to throttle.
Yep. And you're also seeing that there's a company in town who has just recently begun to raise their speeds as well, and I'm sure much for the same reason. So. I get it. It's tough. You build out I don't think anybody expected that the internet would grow quite the way it has.
Some companies even didn't expect it to come out at all.
Well, right. But, you say to yourself, all right, we have email, we have, websites, and so we really only need X amount of bandwidth to handle Y amount of people. Well, no sooner do those people get hooked up than all of a sudden Skype comes out and YouTube comes out and websites are starting to do interactive stuff. And all the, you know, and suddenly people are using, and Netflix happens and Hulu happens. And all of a sudden people are using 100 times the bandwidth that they originally used. And now the choice is, do we throttle them down to what we've built for?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we spend metric bucket tons of money to upgrade our service and hope people stay with us?
Right.
It's a very difficult choice, and these companies have the same problem we all have. Where's that money going to come from? They don't just have those buckets sitting around full of cash just waiting.
One thing that you did bring up, and I just want to digress for a second about Skype.
Yeah.
And this past holiday, thank God for Skype.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm coming from, folks, as you know, the holidays are always a hard time for folks to get through in that. And especially for a military, you know, that aren't home. They weren't there for Christmas. They weren't there for New Year's. But again, thank God for Skype, because I know a number of individuals that were able to connect free of charge, and see and talk live to the loved ones at home. And that makes a big difference. You know, it's a lot different than just a simple phone call and, you know, you're looking at a picture of that. But to actually see the individuals at the other end, that makes a world of difference. And to be able to do that free of charge, my hat goes off to Skype and still keeping that free.
Yeah. Well,
computer to computer is free.
Right. Computer to computer is free. Skype, Google Hangouts, Uber Conference, a couple of others.
FaceTime,
all of them doing free stuff for that. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
It is, and it made a world of difference. I know to a number of my friends that weren't able to be home with their loved ones, and especially this one gentleman had a new baby girl that was only like 9 months old. You know, he wasn't able to see her first Christmas, but he was because of due to Skype.
Yep.
Couldn't be there, but he was there.
Yep.
So, you know, that's a good thing, and thank you for letting me digress for a second.
No, it's entirely all right. Back to the phones.
Mm-hmm.
Our next caller is Bud from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bud. What's up?
Hey, I don't know if you guys could help me with this, but anyway, I got myself a Roku player attached to my TV.
Sure.
And every now and then, it says, not getting a strong signal. And it says to try moving your Roku player, which, you know, I really can't move it too far because of the length of the cord.
Right.
And sometimes it works beautifully, and other times, again, it'll just freeze either on Netflix or the music station. And I'm wondering if, down in the basement in the farthest part of my house is, I think, what you call it, the modem.
Right.
Yeah, there
that's
you go.
The problem. How far away is the Roku box from your router box?
Well, and what's actually, they're at opposite ends of each other.
Yep. Yeah, that's a problem. These wireless, and that may actually be part of Ray's problem. We didn't ask him about whether he's doing wireless or wired. In general, the problems with wireless are the same problems with radio, and they have always existed and they will always exist. You only can push a signal so far. It starts to attenuate the minute it leaves the antenna, that is to say, getting lousier.
Uh-huh.
And, fortunately, it's an inverse square.
Right. And if there's any kind of metal between you and that router, your signal will get even worse. So having it in the basement is fine, but how many heating ducts are between you and a line of sight between you and that router?
And steel I-beams holding the house up.
And steel I-beams and everything else.
And the other thing, too, now is if folks are finishing off their basements, they're not using 2x4s anymore. They're using the aluminum studs.
Right.
Yeah. So if you can run a wire from your router from your internet modem to, well, that's another problem too. If your internet modem is also your wireless modem, then you need to move that router sort of closer to the center of the house. Some people have an internet router that they rent from the internet company, and then they have their own separate wireless router, which our previous caller was asking about. And if you can run a wire to that more centrally located, or best yet is to run a wire straight to the Roku. Wired is always better. Mm-hmm. For signal strength and quality, but wireless is just so much more convenient.
And coax is, Cat 5 cable is so cheap.
Yeah.
I mean,
easier to run than coax.
Yeah,
you could run a coax. Do you have cable internet or DSL?
I have got cable.
Cable, yeah. So there's a coax cable coming into your basement with the cable modem on it. You can run your own coax. You can probably call Time Warner and pay them to do it, to move your cable router closer to the center of the house. Or in fact, even into your living room.
Right. Right now, the router or whatever you call it, the modem is in the basement. The TV is on the ground floor. It's a ranch.
Yeah.
So could I go, say, for instance, to Radio Shack and get a coaxial cable myself and attach it to the modem and move it? Or should I?
You'd have to unplug the coax that's going into the modem and get a coupler and get a longer coax cable and move the modem.
To more of a central location.
Right. Yep.
Alternately, if you're only going up one floor and it's semi-close, you could probably run a Cat 5
cable. Cat 5's cheaper, and all you got to do is drill a little hole where it's located, go down into the basement, run it through the rafters
right
downstairs, and plug it right into the modem.
Even come up next to a heating duct
was the name of that cable again?
Cat 5.
It's Ethernet.
Category 5.
Yeah, Ethernet cable category 5 is the most common cable.
The maximum length of a Cat 5 cable is 100 meters.
Which is about 1,000 feet.
Right.
Oh, that would be, my house is 47 feet long, so that should...
It's actually 328 feet.
Well, then you could probably get a 75-foot cable.
Uh-huh.
You can go and get, a 75-foot cable. That way you've got a little slack if it's going from one end of the house to the other, because you don't want it super tight. If it's 47 and, by the time it drops down to where it's got to plug in and go up, I'd go, say, a 75-footer. You can get them pre-made up.
Uh-huh.
And you just drill a small hole, drop it down into the basement, or pop it up through the basement, up into the room. Plug it in and then run it through the rafters on over to the modem. Plug it in, you're good.
Yeah.
Okay, and now I see there's two connections on my Roku. So this cable you're talking about, I could plug that in.
It looks like an oversized telephone cable with eight pins on it. That's the Ethernet cable.
So I plug one end of that in, and then the other end I could attach to my modem.
Mm-hmm.
If you're spot on there where I can plug that in.
That's the other question. Some modems only have one connection, and that's what you plug into your own network router.
Uh-huh.
Some modems have more than one connection.
Okay, whatever. I haven't really examined mine, but it's what Time Warner put in.
10 to 1 odds. If he's using wireless, he's got the open end.
Yeah, so most of the time, if it's a single box from Time Warner that does both wired and wireless internet, you're going to have several wired Ethernet ports.
Yeah, 3 or 4 at least.
Okay, so that's a good thing.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm going to try it. So you guys think, instead of just moving the modem, get this cable you're talking about and run it. Well, I could easily run it because I've got speaker cables coming up here and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And so that should really take care of it.
You got it.
Okay, yep. Thank you guys so much.
Sure.
Have a good one.
Yep.
Yeah, moving them closer together may be easier, but if you're familiar with running cable and know how to do that, then wired is better.
Although I'm not sure I wouldn't run a Cat 6 cable.
Yeah, Cat 5 has been replaced by Cat 5e, which has been replaced by Cat 6, and it is 100 meter rated, but I remember we took a 1,000-foot spool in a box and hooked two ends on, and it worked fine.
It worked fine over it. I'm just never going to recommend it because somebody calls. I went 200 meters and it didn't work well.
Well, because the problem is a long wire is sometimes known as an antenna,
exactly,
which picks up extra radio signal, which makes noise on the line.
Right, and particularly if you're stringing it straight up.
Yep.
It's just like hoisting an antenna above your house. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Michael Oden sitting in quietly in the background, just nodding out over there. Mina, Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and I am delighted to say we have Glenn from Pasadena, Texas, on the line. How are things down in Texas?
A bit cool.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Okay, define cool.
Define cool. Gee, now I got to get over here and look at the thermometer here.
Yeah, 72.
While I'm looking, the reason I called was, and I realize this is sort of a nitpicky thing, but it bugs me every time somebody calls with a cable modem problem and y'all start talking about DSLAMs. A DSLAM is only on a DSL system.
Right, it's a phone
cable
thing.
Modem uses what's called a CMTS, or cable modem termination system.
Correct.
And it's 48 outside right now.
Okay, you can shut up about the temperature now.
I read something on the weather blog the other day. It's colder in Winnipeg than it is on Mars.
Wow.
The Mars rover reported the temperature as -3 Celsius, and it's colder in Winnipeg.
Nice. You're right. And of course, they're not actually modems.
Yeah.
As such, they don't really do modulation.
It's just kind of a generic term we've developed over the years.
It's the word everybody knows.
Yeah. So yeah, you're right. We use it. And you're right. They're not DSLAMs are what DSL uses or phone companies use, and CMTSs are indeed what cable modems use.
Yes.
And I haven't even bothered to look up what fiber uses.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just the fiber junction.
Well, we just got into the issue.
Oh, doesn't even have a name.
The reason we used it so much, though, Glenn, was because we were having a lot of issues up here in New York State with DSL, folks complaining that. And it was a big thing because they had to be so far from the DSLAM. For months, over months, folks were complaining because they were too far, maybe, from the DSLAM.
From the central office, which is, of course, neither centralized nor an office.
Yeah, really. And that was just a big issue for months. I mean, when I'm talking months, 6 to 7 months minimum.
Well, we had a U-verse at one point, and which basically puts the DSLAM closer to you because they run fiber to the node.
Yep.
But it doesn't necessarily help, because if you got bad copper in your neighborhood, as we did, we still had bad service.
Well, and that's the other part of the problem, isn't it? It's all about the infrastructure.
Indeed.
That's why, you know, we have what we consider not necessarily first world companies on our level who have gigabit to the house or 100 megabit to everybody or whatever, because they've gotten newer systems. We're still in many areas of the country, we're still using systems that were built in the early 1900s, if not earlier.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, now we're on cable and we get about 60 megabit down.
Yep. And it depends on where you are and who your provider is and how new their infrastructure is. And I get that. I'm not in any way dissing the companies that have older equipment, except to say that they've got older equipment and therefore they have problems that the companies putting in new equipment don't have. Yeah, absolutely. I'm assuming you're listening to us over the internet. So I don't think
yes, I am. Also, this phone call
is
actually over the internet because I'm using a VoIP provider.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's ridiculously clear.
Yes.
Very nice.
Yep.
Glad to hear that.
Yes.
Yep. All right, Glenn, you keep listening. And, of course, your job is to get every single person in Pasadena, Texas. And then
that sounds like a big challenge.
Well,
hey, you're up for it. Texas does everything big.
That's right. And next, I'm sending you a little west to Houston. Get all of them listening, too.
Thank you.
That's your job. Thanks, Glenn. Bye-bye. Well, that was nice. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are taking this opportunity to run our contest. Our good friends at Frag Repairs have a contest going on right now. You can win a certificate good for one PC cleanup at Frag Repairs. They're located at 1472 Monroe Avenue here in Rochester, so probably Glenn is not going to be the guy who wants to win this. The way it works is this. If you're currently on the line, I'm afraid we're going to hang up on you. So we have to do this this way. And then we'll just start taking calls. And we'll take caller number 10, and that person will get... Dave will just pick up the phone and say, you know, whatever he says. And then at person number 10, he'll go, you're the winner, and hand it over to Steve to write down the winner. And then you'll have that certificate, and we'll mail something out to you, and you can go to Frag Repairs and get a cleanup. It's good only for a cleanup. He's not building you a free system or any of that stuff. It's just a cleanup of your PC to get it running better, check for viruses, all of that other stuff. Frag Repairs is one of our great underwriters, and they have agreed to do this. So we're very honored that the folks at Frag Repairs are doing this. So when I say go, Dave is going to dump all the lines and then take caller number 10. Ready, steady, go. And meanwhile, we'll just talk about stuff while this goes on, and then we'll have our winner. Again, if you have won this or anything from this station in the last 30 days, please sit on your hands and give someone else a chance. It's nice to spread the wealth, and this is what we want. This PC cleanup, this one PC cleanup, you can use any time in the next 6 months. So that's not so bad. We have a winner. You may now stop talking.
Find the paper and find the pen.
Just because I had the paper and it hid in the pen, that's a problem for you? Definitely we have this whole thing going on, and we're very pleased with our friends at Frag Repairs for holding this little contest and generously giving away a free PC cleaning. Again, you can use that one cleaning anytime in the next 6 months. Just present. We'll have your information, which we will pass on to the folks at Frag Repairs. And while you're there, feel free, of course, to check out whatever else they do there. And
tell them thank you for being an underwriter of Soundbites.
That's
how
exactly
much you appreciate it.
We love our underwriters, and we love to support them. So that's good. That's good to know. We're very pleased with that. So, again, Glenn, I'm sorry you're probably not. Don't bother calling in.
You know, Glenn points out a good thing, though. I wonder how many other things. He just happened to point out that one term that we use because we've been... Well, coming up in 25 years, we start 25 years this coming September.
Yep.
Wow.
Our 25th anniversary.
And we haven't gotten divorced yet.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? This is your longest relationship.
A second.
Oh, okay.
Lori was my longest.
Oh, all right. There you go.
Yeah.
But we're very pleased, by the way, to be doing this. It's we've loved doing this show for the last 24 years and odd months. It's listed on the website, actually 24 years, 4 months, and one day. We have a winner. We want to congratulate Andrew for winning. I was just looking at his email address. It's interesting.
And he has a question.
Now the next thing, he's got a question on top of it.
Yeah.
All right.
It's funny how that works, you know, a computer show, talk show.
All right, Andrew, what do you got to say for yourself? Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I just heard some guys calling about a Roku, and I had a question about Google TV.
Yeah.
I wound up buying this 2 months ago, and I picked it over the Roku because it's got the built-in web browser.
Yep.
And for about the first 3-4 weeks that I had it, I could use it, browse the web, pull up videos. Now when I go to watch videos through the web browser and I click full screen, it all of a sudden kicks me right back out to my home screen, out of the web and everything. I didn't know if you knew what might be causing that.
I thought Google had given up on Google TV because none of the networks will play along.
Are you talking about Google TV or the Chromecast?
No, it's actual Google TV.
Yeah, I'm on their website. They do They do have a Google TV box. So yeah, they must have redesigned it. Because when Google TV originally came out, the idea was that it could intercept broadcast television and say, you type in, I want to watch House, and it finds it broadcast, it finds it cable, it finds it internet, and shows it. And right, all of the TV stations started blocking that, so the Google TV quit working.
Okay.
Right. Well, so, you can still do Netflix and Amazon and Crackle and all of those things.
So this looks like it's a step up.
All the apps as well, just like a Roku did. And then my thought was, well, it's also got a built-in web browser, so you can do stuff, go out to websites that stream videos or have videos on them. But when I click to put it on full screen on my TV, it just totally kicks out of the app altogether.
How big is your television?
It's just a 40-inch.
40-inch. I'm wondering if maybe the processor in it doesn't have
the capability. Well, but it used to work,
yeah?
It used to work, right?
Yeah, it worked fine for the first 3 or 4 weeks, and now all of a sudden I'm having these issues, and I didn't know maybe if it's site-specific.
No, I suspect that you're... Well, if it's only with one site, then yes. If all the other sites work full screen, then it's just that one... It's the site. Either you've...
Does it work okay at small screen?
Are you having the trouble with?
It works okay on small screens, but I noticed actually on when I've tried to hit the full screen button, it just kicks it right out again.
From everything?
Yeah.
What it sounds like to me is there's an actual issue with the device, and you're going to have to go through Google or whoever you bought it from.
Okay.
To get that fixed. That sounds like an actual physical issue.
See if there's a firmware update for it.
Yeah, you might just need to update.
Okay, because, I mean, it always downloads whatever updates, and I mean, the web browser is just Google Chrome, so I didn't know if maybe there were issues with Chrome
Which Google TV box do you have?
The newest one, so I think it's the third version of it now.
Right, but you can get it from Buddy Box or...
I bought it at Best Buy when I picked up the TV.
Was it built into the TV, or is it connected to the TV?
No, it was a separate box. It's a separate thing. It wasn't built right into the TV.
Is it a cube or like a deck of cards or?
It looks like a. It's about the size of probably like a wireless router almost. You know.
Okay, could be the Netgear, could be the Vizio.
Yeah, Vizio, Sony. Yeah.
It's a Sony one.
Sony. Okay. Sony Internet Player.
Let me. I got the box.
Yeah, I would check. Yeah, check with the company that made it. And they should have a website for support and see if there's a firmware update available.
Okay, I will do that.
You might be able to find a firmware update through the menus.
Okay.
Try that first.
Yeah, it might just say software update, too. It may not say firmware update.
Right.
Okay, I will try that.
Good luck.
All right, thank you guys very much.
Thanks. Yeah, one of the problems with all of these things, of course, is that every once in a while they need some form of firmware update.
Yeah.
Or software.
Yeah, they got to keep up with things.
And I get that. That's
so what's the difference between a Google TV box and a Chromecast box?
Well, the Google TV is now being built into a bunch of things.
Well, yeah.
And originally
the separate boxes, yeah.
Well, but originally it's what you said. They searched everywhere... for a show you wanted to watch.
Right.
But now they've all been blocked from doing that, which is, I think, short-sighted and stupid on the part of the producers of
content. Yeah, well, the networks want you to go to their own web channel.
Now, how much is Hulu a month?
$8.
$8.
Well, Hulu is free. Hulu Plus is $8 a month.
Right.
What's the difference?
Hulu Plus gives you more content and farther back in episode history. So Hulu, you might get the last 4 episodes of a TV show. Hulu Plus, you'll get the last years.
Oh, okay.
Right. Amazon is, what, $12 a month now for multiple users? You can
Netflix is also the $8 a month.
Netflix is $8
So it looks like Google TV does YouTube, Google Play, Chrome. And so Chrome is it's a general web browser. So the Chromecast, you use your web browser on your computer or tablet.
And shoot it forward.
And shoot it to the TV. With the Google TV box, the web browser is built in.
Right. So that's the difference between them. All right, that sound tells me you've wasted an entire hour of your life listening to this show. Luckily, you get a chance to do it again in case you're not smart enough to have learned from the first hour. Because we're going to take a short hiatus of just a few minutes, and then we'll be back
with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We have Dave Enright. We have Steve Ray. We have Michael Oden, who seems to be doing some sort of Zen meditation on the stool over there. And me, Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe in its first show of the new year. It's Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And because you haven't learned yet, we're going to do this for another hour. It's 5 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites.
We are?
We are.
Nobody told me.
Sorry, you're stuck here for another hour. Oh, you can go home. We've got Michael. Oh. Hey, you're the one. Don't tell me.
And you can catch that on camera.
I think you're on camera.
That's okay.
All right, we love
most
you,
folks.
Dave.
Most folks know my glass adjustment.
Yeah, we love you, Dave. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Ernest in Perrington, New York. Welcome, Ernest. What's up?
I feel the love.
Hi, guys. Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
Yeah, listen, I need some advice. I need to get a laptop for my job. I use it mostly for dictation and some other programs. And I was looking on HP site. They have a hybrid drive and an acceleration hard drive and memory. I don't know, just to get high memory and a hybrid drive, or get the hybrid drive with a acceleration hard drive, something like that.
Well, I'm not sure what they mean by an acceleration hard drive, but I'll tell you what you need. You need RAM, definitely.
Yes.
So 4 gig is a minimum. Uh-huh. 8 gig would be better.
Since he's doing dictation, I'd say 8 minimum, 16 better.
Yeah, right.
Up the ante.
8 gig minimum, 16 better. If you're looking at hard drives, there are a couple of ways you can go. One is with a traditional standard spinning disk hard drive.
Uh-huh.
10,000 RPM, 15,000 RPM obviously is faster.
Yeah, they don't have those. They only have 5,400.
Okay, then,
which is cheaper. That's why they put them in laptops.
Right, that's why they put them in laptops. You can also get something called an SSD, solid state drive.
Right.
It's essentially a flash drive.
And hybrid is usually a combination of the two. Apple calls theirs a fusion drive.
Right.
So it's got a little bit of SSD on it for speed, and then the spinning mechanical disk for storage. And that makes opening and saving files faster.
Because it's buffering?
It's like having a giant buffer, but it's less expensive than having an actual buffer in the hard drive.
Right. And I don't know that it will do a lot for you in this instance.
For dictation, speed of the hard drive almost doesn't matter. The processor speed matters more. I would put more money into the processor and not worry about a hybrid
processor
hard drive.
And RAM.
Okay.
Certainly, you want a lot of storage, but the speed of that storage, I believe, is less relevant than the amount of RAM.
Yeah, because
you have.
The amount that you're going to be dictating, you know, and the slowness. I mean, dictation software is not super fast that you can go this fast and talk and have it understand every moment and punctuation and going on and on and on and on. It's not going to be able to keep up.
Yep. Right. So I would suggest at least an i7 processor.
Right. No, I'm going to get that in. I think I can get about 16 gigs of RAM. And,
yes,
perfect.
Maybe in a hybrid drive. I'm not sure, or just a regular drive.
Either one. I mean, certainly a hybrid drive will help you with other things.
Yeah,
but it will not help you with the dictation.
Yeah, okay. If we were doing a lot of photos and video with a lot of disk access, then the hybrid drive would make more sense there.
And the one thing with Windows, the more memory you throw at it, the better it likes it.
Okay.
Right.
It's a bigger dance floor.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
You're welcome.
There you go. Thanks.
Bye.
We talk about this a lot. You know, I want to get a new computer. What should I get? Our first question is always, what are you going to do with it?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I racked up a $9,000 Dell laptop last week. Because I put the 32 gigs of RAM in it. I put the four SSDs in it rated, which surprised me. Four SSDs in a laptop, but it was a 19-inch laptop, so it had more space in it.
Oh, okay.
And maxing everything out on it.
Dual hard drives?
Four SSDs rated together, and got it up to almost $10,000.
Nice.
But you know what? To me,
or this is $299 Chromebook from HP.
Exactly.
It depends on what you want to do with it.
It depends on what you want to do with it. I own a Chromebook, and I use it for almost everything. If I'm editing video or audio, then certainly I sit at my desktop. But for everything else, including recording video and audio, I can do it on my Chromebook. And in fact, last month for a company, well, we did a Google Hangout for the Pirate Toy Fund for mm-hmm. Christmas, and edited that entirely online with free editing video editing software online.
Have you seen the ads talking about the different BooksNet and alternatives? The new Kindle Fire, they're comparing that to the iPad?
The Kindle Fire HDX, yeah.
Yeah, they're saying pixels and everything
well,
else.
More pixels is the one thing I'll get it. I'll grant them. It's lighter because it's smaller. It's cheaper because it's smaller. It has a smaller screen.
So but how much smaller?
But again, it doesn't. It depends.
Right,
my daughter, with her little 7-inch tablet, I have the 7-inch Nexus.
Yep,
the Nexus
same
7.
Here.
So does my daughter. She has made the text even smaller. She can read stuff on it. But her eyes are so
My son does that with his iPod. I got him an iPod
for
Christmas.
So
little tiny screen.
That little screen.
So how old are your eyes is how big a screen you need.
Exactly.
And how long are your arms?
Well, that's exactly right.
So the Kindle Fire HDX is 9 inches.
No, I have to laugh at this because our age is starting to show.
My eyes are old, not me.
Yeah. Yeah, so is that solar heater?
Yeah. It's a solar panel for a sex machine. That's right. There it all is.
It's just a funny, the way we sit there and divert things to something else.
Yeah. Right. So the HDX comes in a 7-inch model and a 9-inch model.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they're touting it. You know.
Yeah. The 9-inch model is $379, so it's $100 less than the iPad 10-inch model.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is also 9.7.
Well, that's 9. So yeah. So the Kindle is technically 8.9, and the iPad is 9.7.
No, it says 9.3 right there.
8.9.
Okay. So it's a 9 versus 10.
Yeah. So it's $100
and again,
an inch.
For some people, that is an example. So,
and some people, the other thing Amazon does, the $379 price is with special offers. That means you get advertising on it. It's $394 if you don't want any advertising on it.
Right. Right. Another $20.
Another $20, yeah. Right. So that's kind of interesting.
Bucks.
With kind of interesting thing that Amazon has done, because they've got the regular Kindle book reader down to $79 with advertising,
right.
And $79 is a really good price for a book reader. All you want is a book reader, which that's enough for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people
want
a book reader,
and you can store hundreds of books in your pocket because mm-hmm. books are small in storage space.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Now I use my Nexus 7 constantly to read. I have the Kindle app. I have the Nook app.
Same here.
I have a half a dozen other apps for books from other places. And so I have thousands of books that I read on it. But I also use it for other things. But you know what? I can do those other things somewhere else for $79.
That's pretty cheap.
For a reader, that's an awfully good price.
Mm-hmm.
That's an awfully good price.
We went to see Ender's Game last weekend, finally got around to it, and liked it. So I bought Ender's Game on my iPad, but I'm in the middle of the Void Trilogy, and I want to finish that before I get to Ender's Game, because I just finished the Commonwealth Trilogy that leads into the Void Trilogy 1,500 years later.
Right.
Peter F. Hamilton writes really, really long books. His average paperback is 1,000 pages.
Now,
I did love Ender's Game. I really did. I liked a couple of the others. I read the whole series, but...
The movie didn't do very well.
No, I don't know. Well, I don't know. I loved it.
Speaking of movies out in trilogies, have either one of you seen the new Hobbit one compared to The Lord of the Rings? How does that tie in? Is that a good or?
It's excellent. I really enjoyed it. I'm a fan of the whole what, 11 books of the trees. It's like Douglas Adams. Everybody thinks of Tolkien as having written a trilogy, but he wrote the whole Silmarillion, the Adventures of Tom Bombadil, The Hobbit, a bunch of other stuff. So,
the ever-increasingly misnamed trilogy.
Yeah. Well, it's done being increasing now.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, Tolkien's son is releasing new books based on his notes, and other people. There was this, just the sixth book in the Hitchhiker trilogy came out. Right. Other people are writing books.
No, I was just wondering. How
it was excellent.
Well, I did hear.
Cinematography was phenomenal.
Did you see the HDR version?
Was good. No.
I did read. Well, some of the theaters have a high frame rate, a 48 frame per second version. Mm-hmm. And we saw that with the first Hobbit movie, and the big complaint we heard was it looked too real.
Yep.
It didn't look like a movie. It looked too real. It looked like a window. It looked too real. So apparently they made it a little better in the second one. We haven't seen it yet either. But there was an interesting, I think it was on Honest Trailers, when they did the trailer for The Hobbit. They said it was a 3-hour prequel to The Desolation of Smaug. Part two, Smaug. You have to put the A in it.
Yeah.
It takes 45 minutes to get to the journey to start.
But it's all interesting.
Yeah, the whole thing is the journey.
Well,
The Lord of the Rings was three books that were, what'd they say? They were like 1,000 pages together, and they made that into a trilogy.
1,000 pages of movies. Pretty close.
But The Hobbit was only 300 or 400 pages by itself, and they're making that into 3 3-hour movies.
Right. They left out an amazing amount of stuff from The Lord of the Rings, and they put in an amazing amount of stuff in the Hobbit. It's pretty funny.
And characters are in The Hobbit movie that weren't in The Hobbit book because we know them from The Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Right. And
that actually comes after The Hobbit.
They actually created a whole new character.
Yeah.
For the movie, who doesn't exist in the books, just to get a woman into the series somewhere, and so that's
interesting.
And she's excellent. So it's a really well done movie, and I'm waiting for the third one. Martin Freeman is wonderful in it.
Who was Arthur Dent in Hitchhiker's Guide? So we've got
Arthur
Adams
Dent.
And Tolkien combined.
Exactly.
Okay.
I really liked him, and of course, Benedict Cumberbatch as the dragon is phenomenal. And of course, Sylvester McCoy. All the good wizards are him. So
that was also in. Are you familiar with Honest Trailers? It's a YouTube channel that makes fun of trailers, you know, and the dwarves are always stopping and singing.
Yeah.
And the wizards are smoking weed and doing shrooms.
It's Tolkien.
So that's all you need to be a wizard is a long staff and some weed.
Yeah. Well, there's if you've read the books, The Hobbit. In The Hobbit, they talk about how the best tobacco comes from the Shire.
Okay.
Yep.
And everybody smokes. Everybody smokes.
And eats Twinkies.
Because they're...
they didn't have Twinkies.
The Hobbits are simple folk.
They haven't had a Twinkie since they came back.
Twinkies have been around for decades. They probably
some of the original ones are still around.
Yes. They'll survive a nuclear holocaust.
Yeah, no kidding.
Along with cockroaches.
No kidding. Listen, maybe when we come back, we'll do the contest again.
That sounds like a plan.
I'll explain it one more time.
Yeah, go ahead.
Our good friends at Frag Repairs, who are one of our underwriters, bless all our underwriters, in particular Frag Repairs, have a contest going. They will give a certificate good for one PC cleanup, which you can use anytime in the next 6 months, at their shop at 1472 Monroe Avenue. So what we'll do is after this short intermission, we'll give that away to a caller. We'll figure out which caller. You make the call, and we will give it away. So that'll be kind of fun. And in the meantime, we will take a short intermission. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray. Michael Oden is just leaving the room in disgust. I'm Nick Francesco.
It is 19 minutes. There he goes. 19 minutes after the hour. We're the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we are in the middle of a wonderful little contest. As I said before the break, our good friend at Frag Repairs is in the middle of a little contest. We will get on the phone and grab somebody. Probably today's the fourth. Let's take the fourth caller.
That works.
And you can win a certificate. Good for one PC cleanup, which you can use anytime over the next 6 months at 1472 Monroe Avenue, which is where Frag Repairs is located. So what I'll do is I'll give you the phone number. I'll say go. You make the call. Dave will tell you whether you've won or not, and we'll have to dump who's ever on the line right now. And you can call back right after the contest. And then what we will do is we will grab that person. Name and number, and then they can have that cleanup, which is so generously donated by our friends at Frag Repairs. The number you have to call, I'm assuming this will only be local people who will call, 966-5299. That's 966-5299. Ready? Steady? Go! And now they're calling. The phones are lighting up like mad. Davis, that's 966-5299, and we have a winner.
Congratulations, you're our winner.
We have a winner. You can stop calling now. And for those who have a question, give us a minute to take this information from this person, and then we will get back to
the regular calls,
the phones. So we want to thank again our friends at Frag Repairs. It's great that they're doing this. It's a terrific thing to do.
Yeah, get your machine all cleaned up, ready for the new year.
And that's just it. As we all know, as our machines get older, a lot of cruft builds up in them. You know, you do the security tango and all that stuff. You do the cleanup.
Well, they can also point out different things. You know, when you're doing the diagnostics, I know for myself, you can sit there and tell things that might be potentially getting ready to go. You know, maybe some bad sectors on a hard drive might all of a sudden pop up.
Right.
And they can make you aware of that. That, you know, hey, maybe down the road, you know, because it's showing up some bad clusters, you might want to consider changing out this hard drive.
Yep.
So they can also make recommendations, too.
Yep. And we know that...
did you have a question also?
This technology eventually fails.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything... Okay, you've seen light bulbs blow. It's the same idea... with all the wires in a computer that have electricity running through them. Every once in a while, you're going to lose one. Bad stuff is going to happen. We want to congratulate Doug from Rochester, who apparently is also on the line.
Yes, I am.
Congratulations, Doug. You're a winner.
Well, thank you very much.
What can we do for you?
I have SkyDrive on my computer.
Sure.
And it came with it.
Uh-huh.
Is that something that can be taken off?
Well, there's nothing much actually there.
Well, there's two pieces of SkyDrive. SkyDrive is a Microsoft a cloud disk service, so you store files in the cloud. There is a companion application that you install on your computer or your tablet or your phone to allow you to access those files. So you can delete the files from the SkyDrive and uninstall the program from your computer. Which you should probably do in that order if you are uninstalling them, because anything you have on SkyDrive will stay there even after you uninstall the program.
Right.
Okay.
Now
it's very similar to Google Drive and Dropbox and the other cloud disk services.
Now, what makes you want to remove it?
When I send emails to people with photographs, it's always encased by the SkyDrive.
And that can be a good thing, because most email is limited in the size of a message it will take. 3 or 4 megs is common. So if you try to send more than 1 or 2 pictures, it won't fit through the email. So by putting it on the SkyDrive, you can send people lots of pictures, lots of files that won't ordinarily fit through email.
Okay. Do you think it's a benefit just to leave it alone?
I personally would leave it alone.
Although it is an advertisement for SkyDrive at the other end. Microsoft wants the people you email to join SkyDrive. It's free to join. You get 7 gigs of disk space. It is one of the largest free disk space companies.
Right.
Okay. Right. Okay. I didn't know that.
What I tend to do is leave stuff like that alone, and every once in a while I pay attention to it, see how full it's getting, if there's something on it I want to keep, and then erase everything else so that it stays fairly clear. The other thing that you can use it for is as a backup. Not your only backup, but as an extra backup. So, for example, if you have fewer than 7 gigabytes of documents, less than 7 gigabytes of documents on your hard drive, you could copy them all over to the SkyDrive and then copy any new ones over as you create them. If you have more than 7 gigs, you can periodically delete what's there, delete what's on the SkyDrive, zip up all your documents and put that zip file up on the SkyDrive. Able to use it as an extra backup, not as your only backup, but as an extra backup is really a very nice thing to be able to do.
Okay.
And then Microsoft has tied it into their other services with Outlook.com and Outlook Calendar. So that's probably why you're getting your pictures attached to it. Right. If you used a non-Microsoft mail reader, then it wouldn't attach to your SkyDrive.
Okay.
Right. Are you on Windows 8?
No, 7, fortunately.
Yeah, it's one of those features that's built into Windows 8 as well.
Right.
Okay.
But it really is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it depends. If what you're sending are pictures of secret plans of a new project you're creating that will make you $1 billion, you may not want to share that with Microsoft.
Okay.
Not that anybody's going to look at it anyway. Nobody does. But you may not want to put that out there in the world. But if it's like just pictures of your backyard during the snowstorm, who cares?
Yeah, pretty much landscape photographs and that,
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yep. Yeah, let it hang there.
Okay, I will leave it alone.
There you go.
It's just it came with the computer and I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. Yep.
And most people didn't know what it was that, anytime I sent them an email.
Well, a lot of TV shows Microsoft has been sponsoring lately. Hawaii Five-O is probably one of the biggest ones.
Yeah.
When they stop and focus on the Microsoft logo when the guy pulls out his tablet, no, not his tablet, his Windows Surface,
right.
It's a sponsored ad. But they're always talking about throwing photos to the SkyDrive. So when they name brands, it's a paid advertisement.
Clearly, nobody Doug knows is actually watching
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, clearly. But yeah, there's a bunch of them. Like Steve said, Google does it, Dropbox does it, SkyDrive does it, iCloud does it. A dozen places do it. All of them so far are free. All of them give you between 5 and 7 and 10 or however many gigs.
I got into SkyDrive early because of my Xbox, so I got 25 gigs of free storage.
Right, I have 125 on Google because of buying Chromebooks and getting it early and everything else that I did. So using these things, in fact, my idea is that you get several of them because they're free.
There's even,
and use them as multiple backups.
There's even a program, I forget the name of it, we talked about it before, that will gather all the free space from all the services and make it one folder on your computer. So they add the 5 from Dropbox, the 7 from SkyDrive, 10 from Google, and they just add it all up. Media Express is another one that gives you 50 gigabytes. But
Media
there's
Fire?
Media Fire
I don't think
Express.
They give you 50 anymore.
They did. Well, the limitation was it doesn't sync with your computer like the other services do. You have to upload it yourself. But Media Express would give you 50 gigabytes. Media Fire is the company. Media Fire Express was the program. So the idea there was that you upload your movies and pictures to Media Fire. And then not have to store them on your phone or your tablet with its limited storage.
up to 50 gigs of disk space. So they surely don't start there.
No, that would be sufficient. That would be, you know.
Yep.
I recently did the off-site backup that you recommended maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago. Is it CrashPlan?
Yeah, CrashPlan and Carbonite is one,
yep,
too.
Yep.
Yes, and I enjoy that. That's, yep, a lot of peace, yep, of mind.
CrashPlan has a neat option that I just remembered and I'm setting up at my office. Most cloud storage companies will charge you, it's usually $3, $4, $5 a month to store on their cloud.
Mm-hmm.
CrashPlan has a neat option where you can put a hard drive at a friend's house and have an offsite backup for free. And then your friend can put a hard drive at your house. And so you both have offsite backups, and CrashPlan is completely free for that. Nice. So you, yeah, create your own cloud, so if you don't want to trust them.
Yeah, MediaFire gives you 10 gig for free. And then there are plans. 100 gig is $2.50 a month. A terabyte is $25 a month.
Now, what Flickr? When Yahoo bought Flickr, one of the things they did recently is raise your Flickr storage to a terabyte. So Flickr is mostly photos.
Yeah,
It used to be 100 megs a month, was it?
Something like
really
that.
Tiny
you
like
upload
that.
Upload 100 meg a
you
month.
You could upload 100 megs a month, and it would only store like one gig or something. And so Flickr recently went to a terabyte of storage space, so you can upload everything to Flickr.
Oh, that's
until
incredible.
Yahoo kills them.
Yeah, right.
Yahoo's been known to do that. They buy stuff, and then suddenly it's dead.
Yeah.
But so far, Flickr is one of the most popular photo sharing services, specifically for photo sharing. But Facebook is sort of overcoming them in general, because people share photos through their Facebook accounts now.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, I certainly do that.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're using something like Google Drive, if you save documents in their file formats, so they have a word processor, a spreadsheet, a presentation program, graphics programs, all this stuff. If you save things in their format, so far at least, they don't even count against your storage. I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of documents up there that are taking zero space because they're in the Google format. And what's nice is you can set up the system so that if I upload something, it converts it to Google's format. If I download it, it reconverts it back to whatever format I like.
Wow.
So that's a nice way to store documents as well. Again, you know, many of these things are hand things. You work them by hand rather than automated, which means you're not backing up as often as you should. But we're seeing more and more companies come out with automated tools to do this stuff, which is really, really smart of them.
Yes, peace of mind. You don't have to be concerned with it.
Well, that's just it. You know, like I said, I spent the vast majority of my working life as a system administrator, and the best ones are the most paranoid ones. We wake up in the middle of the night hearing tick, 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 because we know something somewhere is going to fail. And so the more you can't have enough backups.
I agree. Yeah, I certainly do.
Yep. Yep.
All right, I've got another quick question,
yeah,
if you have a minute. I went to Internet Explorer 11, and since I've done that, I can't, when I go to TVGuide.com and I click on the episode,
yeah,
I can't bring up the information as far as what it's about. Any idea why that would be?
Yes-ish. I don't do TV Guide, so I can't tell you exactly what format it uses. But in many cases, it will use
Flash?
Language in the background.
Oh, yeah.
That, for some reason, by default, IE 11 is blocking. For whatever reason. You may be able to unblock it, but the thing you have to remember when you do that is it's dangerous to unblock it globally. You know, you might want to go and put TV Guide into your trusted internet section so that it doesn't block stuff on TV Guide, but will still continue to block stuff elsewhere.
Okay, that would work.
All right, give that a shot. We got to take a break.
Thanks.
Thank you. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we have John from Pittsford on the line. Welcome, John. What's up?
Well, about a month ago, I danced the security tango.
Yep.
Followed the instructions explicitly, and it actually changed some settings in my system. Among the video display settings, which I managed to figure out and change back. But something is definitely wrong. It's running very slow. There's delays. It seems like it's missing a file. And my only option is to bring the computer back to the gentleman who installed Windows 7 on it. And he says maybe he can figure out what's wrong. Have you ever heard of this? And do you have any suggestions?
I have to be honest with you. Millions of people dance the tango. I've never heard of this happening.
One thing it might be is he had some malware or virus, and it removed some of it, and that virus had attached itself to a Windows file that has then since been removed.
Right. One of the things that I've never been able to satisfactorily deal with, because I don't write most of the software that's in the tango, so you know I have no control over it. Is some of them will just come up and say, oh, look, all of these files are infected. Do you want to just get rid of them? And if somebody says yes, and one of them includes a system file, they've got a problem.
Yeah.
There's a virus that attacks JPEG files. And so if you remove the virus, you lose all of your pictures because all your JPEGs get deleted.
But Steve said is what sounds like is the problem. At some point, you cleaned a file that had it was important to the system.
Is the Windows file system checker still available? Yes, it is still available in Windows 8 and Windows 7. So Microsoft has a tool called the System File Checker, sfc.exe, that will scan through your Windows files and replace any that might be missing or corrupted. So you could start with that and see if it works.
How do I access the System File Checker?
I'm posting a link, but basically you go to the run command and type sfc.org. sfc.exe.
System File Checker. Okay,
yep.
I'll try that. Thank you very much.
But you're welcome. Steve is posting a link on our website at soundbites.org. That's an interesting point. You know,
the irony is that there are cleaning programs that will show you a list of files and ask you if you want to remove them.
Well, that's my point.
Well, that's why I bought use, because I don't know if I should remove them or not.
Right.
Where on the other side, the antivirus and anti-malware programs just go ahead and remove them all without asking you.
Right.
So you can't win either way.
It's a problem. You know, if you remove a system file, you will now have a problem and may not, in fact, be able to boot. But rather than saying, look, here's an issue. What would be great is if they then I will have to add SFC.
One other thing that it can do, because normally, you know, maybe a particular file, you know, like you say, got hammered. But if he can get into safe mode by pressing F8, going back and restoring back to a previous date.
Well, that's what he said, but he doesn't want to go back too far because then he'll lose stuff that he's added since. But
just
that may be the bottom line.
Go back to the last day it was booting correctly.
Yeah.
Because if you've got it doing periodically, you know, backups or, you know, restore points, just go back to that particular date that you knew, say today's Saturday, and yeah, it was working fine on Thursday. Go back and see if there's a restore point for Thursday.
Yep.
Well, but working fine doesn't mean clean.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm not saying it is.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah, but he could have had, like, a root kit. I mean, who knows? There's so many possibilities. Even doing the tango isn't going to get rid of it all.
And one of the things in Tango is to boot in safe mode, which turns off all your video drivers.
Mm-hmm.
So when he rebooted back into regular mode, it may have still remembered the old VGA mode and not brought his new video driver back in again.
Well, more likely what you originally said is more correct, which is that the video driver had a problem. It got removed. Now he's stuck in a different video mode.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one he was able to fix.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But something else may not,
Exactly, yeah. It's a domino effect.
Yeah.
You know, it can affect one thing and then another and then another.
And that's why a lot of the repair shops and you know, the commercials you see on TV will say, erase it and start over. That's the only way to be sure. Technically, yes.
Yes,
but,
more,
but it's, you, sure. yeah, you can, but there are other ways.
That would be the last resort
for
me.
There are better ways.
Yeah.
I will say this, God bless Bill Gates. He provided me with a career.
Yeah.
Me too.
No, exactly.
We joke about that a little bit in the Mac world is that you can make more money being a PC repairman because there's so many more problems.
Yep. and so I'm kind of happy about that. But why don't I read another...
But the one thing, just to jump in there for a second, though, what's really starting to slow repairs down and everything else is more and more folks are going to tablets.
Yep.
Right.
More and more.
I'm recommending for people who want a keyboard and spend most of their lives in their browser, I'm recommending Chromebooks.
Yes, that would be a perfect solution, nice and light.
For so many people, all they ever do is go to Facebook, their mail, one or two other websites.
Yeah.
They're used to keyboards.
Yep.
For a few $100, you've got
perfect.
A complete system that will not get viruses because there's nowhere to put them.
Mm-hmm.
At least that we've seen yet.
There's malicious programs you can accidentally download or get tricked into downloading.
Well, you don't download them. Well, you can download
from app stores.
As an app store. Yeah, but
we had a customer. It's frustrating that we couldn't help her, but they bought an iPad for Christmas and then returned it because they couldn't remember their Wi-Fi password. And they couldn't remember their Apple ID password, and they couldn't remember their email password, and she got so frustrated with it that she wants to return it.
Just reset it.
She doesn't know how. Their computer's broken, so they bought the iPad as a replacement for the computer, so they don't have a computer to reset it with. And so, well, we can help you with all that. We set it up on on our internet, because if you don't have an internet connection, it's a little tricky to set up the iPad.
Yeah.
You don't need to log into your Apple account, just like with an Android tablet. You don't need to log into your Google account, but it really does want to have an internet connection to start up.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you as a store, you are going to offer that to help them out because, you know, it's...
Well, and that's what I did. I connected it to our network, let them finish the setup. But
for them to sit there and...
They were so frustrated by the lack of knowledge that they're, you know, just return it. We'll figure it out later.
Well, and yet you've got to have that stuff.
And it was an older couple, so that's part of the frustration.
Yeah, but, you know, I'll stop there.
No, I think it's important that people have... some sort of password on there.
Oh, yeah. No. But the folks not taking the time to, you know, listen.
Well, they didn't set it up. The internet provider
set it
up.
They didn't know it.
Well, and that's the problem.
Well, they should have, whoever the technician was, should have left them a list of their passwords.
And in fact,
and it's on a piece of paper somewhere 10 years ago.
Right. 10 years ago, they may indeed have done that.
And they long forgot that.
Yeah. Right. Because once you type it in once on your device, it remembers it.
See, what I used to always do is for the router, whenever I set that up, on the bottom of the router, I put in the network name, username, and password. Tape it to the bottom of it. Oh, because nobody's going to be able to...
If someone's physically in your house, then your Wi-Fi password is the least of your worries.
Exactly.
You know, for them, just a quick go over, because I had one gentleman say, I forgot everything. Go over to that blue box, flip it over, there's everything you need.
And for...
Oh, thank you.
And for some of the providers, the Wi-Fi password is the MAC address, which is already written on the box.
Yeah.
Right.
But, yeah, no. Oh, well.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, exactly.
That's life.
What are you going to do?
It's the way it goes, and, you know, you're not going to change it.
But for a lot of people, they don't need a full computer because they're browsing the web, they're reading their email, maybe posting on Facebook. So a tablet or Chromebook, an inexpensive laptop is great.
Yeah. And when you've got something that is vetted for you, for example, if you only ever get stuff from the Apple iTunes Store, if you only get stuff from the Google Play Store, if you only get stuff from the Google, whatever they call it for Chrome, Chrome Store probably, the chances are much lower that you will get a virus or have an issue. Not impossible, certainly, but much smaller.
Yep.
And consequently, giving somebody something like a Chromebook and saying, you know, here you go, means, and I talk to people all the time who are in our line of work, and they're saying the same thing. Oh, I bought my parents Chromebooks this year because I do not want to be bothered fixing them all the time and updating them and everything else. Let it just here go, knock yourself out. All right, that music says we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those of you to whom we did not get it, although I don't think there was anybody this week. And congratulations to our winners, Andrew and Doug. Stay tuned, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week long. We will be back here next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.